Hello and welcome to another episode of Monday Night Magic. I am Clues, filling in for our fearless but missing leader, Chewy. I will do my best to talk while muted and get the hiccups partway through in his honor. We may be without Chewy tonight, but rest assured that we will still give you 100% of your recommended daily dose of baseless speculation, poorly interpreted tournament results, and general nonsense. Monday Night Magic is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any disease, condition, or ailment. Prolonged exposure to Monday Night Magic may cause confusion, boredom, dry mouth, dizziness, headaches, or a vague sense that your name might be Steve. Ask your doctor if Monday Night Magic is right for you. Or you could just ask these guys. Joining me from his secret lair, possibly atop Pilot Mountain, is Jack Lacroix. How are you tonight, Jack?
I'm filling in the role for Harry Fat Guy tonight on the episode. And I am doing great. Thank you very much, Clues. That was well worth the effort. Thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad you enjoyed that. And joining us from somewhere between your graveyard and your hand is Squee. How are you tonight, Squee?
Before Monday Night Magic, I was addicted to smack and PCP. Thank you, Monday Night Magic. You have made me a better person, and also I appreciate your amazing, incredible something-something insight. Yes. What are the top five cards now, Clues?
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA.
Or anyone.
Well, gentlemen, welcome to episode number 412 of Monday Night Magic. I don't know that the number 412 has any special meaning.
No, it doesn't. And I'm really hoping that when we make it to 420, we don't make some crude, you know, agriculturally growth industry based humor joke.
All right.
You know, let me make a Hitler joke and then we're going to be really, really sorry.
Oh, yeah. Or a Columbine joke. I mean, it's been no, never mind.
Let's so, play. Yeah. Okay. Let's not go there.
We're already sorry 8 weeks in advance.
I'm glad you went ahead and brought up 420 because I'd like to mention a pet peeve of mine. So, when you go to a major tournament, there are some judges who have to number the tables in the morning. They set up all these table tents, so you know where you're going to sit. And almost without fail, there are two numbers that are missing.
420.
One of them is 420. Can anyone 69. Guess what? And the other one's 69. That's right. Somebody always steals 420 and 69. Now, yeah, it's so very, very funny. Thanks, guys. That's why we always have to have a handmade version of those two numbers. But here's the thing. That's actually theft of tournament materials, and you can be DQ'd for that. So is it really that funny? Is it worth
it? Oh, come on, man. Just get up with the spirit, Clues. You got to free your mind to the possibilities of the humor, man.
Right. Yeah.
That's like the nerd equivalent to the dumb college kid stealing highway signs, then going to jail.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Actually, it pretty much is.
Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. It's terrible. Anyway,
and
so.
And it's not funny. Like, not even that. It's just beyond not funny at this point.
Yeah. I mean, what are we, like 12? Come on now. Seriously.
And realistically, when you're sitting around and, you know, the judge slammer and you're all talking about what you're in for and you've got this guy over here who's called actually cheating and this other guy who pulled a knife on his opponent and then you're the guy who stole the 69 sign. Is that who you want to be?
It's no. Totally not who you want to. And what are you going to do with it anyway? You're going to take it back to your apartment and you're going to set it on the table and you're going to chuckle for like 2 minutes and then it's going to be in the way for, or I don't know, maybe you're using it as a trash can at home. Maybe that's it. I don't know. Speaking of which, table tents are not trash cans. Anyway, look, we're already derailed. We're less than 4 minutes in and we're already derailed.
And Chewy's
honor. We're doing Chewy proud.
That we certainly are. Why don't we talk about some things that actually went on this week in the world of magic? So there was a GP this weekend.
Oh man, Atlanta, I wonder if anyone went there.
Yeah, did either of you pay any attention to it? I know you weren't there because you're lame, just like Chewy.
That's exactly the reason. Was it actually Atlanta? Was that the one that happened?
That was Atlanta.
No, I didn't pay any attention at all to it because I had a horrible experience in Atlanta and I hope to never relive it so long as I live. Yeah. Atlanta can literally like secede from the entire universe and I promise you I would not shed a single tear.
Look, Atlanta is not just a regional hub for Delta.
Atlanta,
it's also where Coca-Cola comes from.
That's right.
And zombies. There's several things I could call Atlanta right now, but for the sake of our listeners, I say we just move along.
Well, I just want to mention that I did have a very interesting and completely nonsensical conversation with a homeless man out in front of Ted's Montana.
Did he rob you?
Well, no, he didn't rob me. He didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Never mind. I'm trying really hard not to tell my ATL story.
All right, well, we'll get that off the air later. Moving right along, there was a GP in Atlanta this weekend, and I believe we had 1,299 players. Really, we couldn't get one more just to round it up. There for Theros Block Limited. So it was, I'm going to say exciting. It was at least Theros Block Limited, I guess. I can.
It's a fun limited format.
So, like, what were the breakout cards for this? Like, I imagine the Black White God, maybe Eros, and a couple of other things.
Yes, let's say. I mean, we'll get to top five cards here, in just a little bit. But, you know, there were a lot of big names here, because, of course, the Pro Tour recently happened. So, lots of the Pro Tour folks were sticking around, or some of them went home and then flew back, which I guess that's okay. But we're there for the event. I was on staff, so I was down there. Main event day one, day two, I was working some of the side events. We'll talk about that probably later. I'll probably ramble at length about something. Who knows? But it was Theros Block Limited, so there's only so much we can say about, what happened, because the breakout decks, they were what we drafted, or what
we're saying is that we're always happy to see Curse of the Swine in the top eight.
Yes.
Keep on that, everybody.
Yeah, nice work. I think there
I like that card.
I think there was only one God pack opened over the weekend. But, you know, bear in mind, people weren't opening six packs of Journey. They were opening two. So, that is what it is.
Do you know if they were allowed to keep their God pack?
Yes, the actual TO decision, and it is up to the TO how it is handled at an event like this. The TO is Pastimes, for anyone who's curious for this particular event. If you opened a God pack, you were to alert a judge immediately, and you could then keep that God pack that was yours to keep. Just put it away, put it in your bag. That's yours. We will replace the pack in your sealed pool with this one instead. And so we would give them a new pack of Journey into Nyx.
Cool. So you didn't have the awkwardness of passing the God pack.
Correct. Correct. I did have a very brief opportunity on Sunday to sit down next to Reed Duke and Owen Turtenwald, who were just chatting.
I'm sorry.
And asked them what they thought. Well, it was just the two, you know, pros that I happened to run into who weren't terribly busy at the moment.
I mean, no, one of these is not like the other, and one of them you could have gone completely without.
Yeah, well, either way, I sat and I spoke to them for a couple of minutes about how they found the format, and they actually said it was very enjoyable. So they really like the Theros Limited. It's a good block. They enjoyed drafting it. They enjoyed playing it. So there you go. At least two people liked it. I'm going to guess that at least one other person liked it, and that was the winner of our event, which was John Stern, who took down the whole thing, fairly packed day two, but he beat out all the rest to walk away with a cool $4,000 for drafting a better deck than Tomoharu Saito, who came in number two. In third place was William Jensen, a bunch of other people, fourth through eighth, but I don't know that we're going to go through all of them, but still. So, there you go. Did either of you watch any of the coverage?
I was away from my computer all weekend.
Yeah, me too, but that's...
You were there.
I was not actually near a computer all weekend.
Well, I gotta say, look, if you're working an event, you often know less about what's going on in Top 8 than if you're at home.
That is entirely true.
Very few judges are actually over working the Top 8. We're all busy trying to, you know, keep the rest of the side events from catching on fire. To my knowledge, nothing caught on fire, which is good, but... Yeah, so, hey, you want to talk about the top five cards? I know I do.
Top five cards.
The top five cards brought to you once again by event coverage staff, because no one is willing to claim these. And in their, let's call it...
Infinite wisdom.
Yeah, okay, sure, we'll go with infinite wisdom.
Aspiring creativity.
No, I think they're just trying to confuse me quite...
Space filling.
I think they're just
space
trying...
Space talking.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to look, seriously, you gotta cut this out so I can actually get a sentence done. I think they're just trying to confuse me, to be honest with you. You know how they normally I complain, and here I'm gonna do it again. Event coverage staff, could you put the top eight decks in order of finish of the top eight? That would make our lives easier. Not this week, because we're not gonna talk about their decks. But this time, the top five cards are not in order from 5 to 1, but in order from 1 to 5.
Oh, hey. That's so nice.
From looking at them, I think it's probably still supposed to be 5 to 1, and they just posted it incorrectly.
You think they just got the numbering wrong?
Okay, given what's number 5 and what's number 1, yeah, I think they probably got the order wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and read them in the order that they have them written here. So according to their numbering scheme, number 1 is Golden Hind. Golden Hind, the elk who makes mana, who's a common.
It's important. So, poops flowers. He was an elf once.
It does poop flowers.
Good job, Llanowar Elk.
Number 2... Llanowar Elk.
That was clever.
That's nice. I gotta get some of those altered now. Number 2 is Rise of the Eagles.
Good job, Gandalf.
Oh, I was gonna go for a joke about the band The Eagles, but no, I think you're right. Going with Gandalf is a better way to go there. Number 3 is Eidolon of Countless Battles.
The Seems like I got nothing
zero
for this
spirit
guy.
That, you know, keeps on doing stuff, let's say.
It's like the frat boy that never learns when the party stops. Hey guys, let's just go into another fight. Nah, dude, like we gotta study. Come on, guys. It's endless fighting. Nah, come on, Eidolon. Like, can we just go home, man? Like, I hadn't washed in 3 months. My loin cloth is smelling. All right, go ahead, please. I'm done.
Good job, so, Enchantment Morrow.
Would you say that someone who engages in behavior like that is guilty of hubris? Because that's number 4 is hubris. Because why not?
Yay.
Good job, Tragic Claw.
And all of its auras for 2. And number 5, everybody's favorite slightly off flavor, King Makar the Gold Cursed.
How's the flavor slightly off?
Oh, you should have listened to Card Advantage last week where I complained at length about this one.
Okay, look, it's you or Mr. Creepypasta when I'm working, and Mr. Creepypasta wins out, I'm sorry.
I don't know who Mr. Creepypasta is.
I don't think that's someone you want to beat.
I don't think that's fair for me to be against Mr. Creepypasta.
Do you like horror movies?
No.
All right, then, never mind.
Very well.
Yeah, the general criticism in the Flavor Cops on King Makar is that his ability is not, you know, a mandatory one, which would have been perfect flavor. Because
yeah,
then he just completely turning his own stuff into gold all the time.
Yeah, so first of all, he is mana fixing in black, which is somewhat rare. Second of all, when he turns your opponent's stuff to gold, you get the gold, which isn't really right. It's not that you're stealing the creatures, it's just you're turning it to gold. And lastly, if you really want to make this, and Squee is absolutely right, if you really want to make this actually a black card, make it mandatory, and so that you're eventually killing your own stuff too. And I say, make it so that instead of you getting the gold, they keep the gold, right? Whoever's creature it was, that's where the gold thing now is.
That would be a decent trade-off for making something, for essentially getting rid of a creature as well.
I think a lot of the point of it is the idea that you turn it into gold and then you get to pick it up and keep it, because that is what Midas did. But I think it would be a little bit nicer for the way they've got the wording here of the, you know, if you do get a gold artifact token.
Mm-hmm.
I think instead it would be like an if you don't, one of your things turns into gold. And you get a gold artifact thing. And that way, it's also forcing you to, it's like one of those weird things that they don't like to do, where it forces you to remember your trigger directly, and directly punishes you if you forget. And I think on a card like this, you can actually do that. And if you mess up, well, that's the point.
Well, flavorfully speaking though, I know we're gonna move on, but I do want to mention this. I love the fact that they gave him this antagonized expression in the picture.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic art.
I love that. And you know, the art for this entire set has just been absolutely wonderful, but that in particular, especially considering where they drew the inspiration for that card, I love it. It's perfect.
Now, the other thing you could do flavor-wise, and this is something we came up with on Card Advantage, you could have instead given him Death Touch. And whenever he dealt damage to a creature, whenever a creature dealt damage by him went to the graveyard this turn, you put a gold token there.
Yeah,
touch them to, but I know they wanted to use Inspired, so they went with that.
Well, what's even better than that is you could get into some really interesting casual interactions with that, with Thornbite Staff.
I don't actually know Thornbite Staff.
It's the pink Thornbite stick. Staff, it's the pink stick. Like, you attach it to something, you can tap it and deal something 1 damage.
Ah, okay.
Or, you know, what is it? The collar from Zendikar. Basilisk Collar.
Basilisk Collar, yep. But Basilisk Collar didn't actually pay.
Oh, wait, yeah, never mind. I had a moment of stupidity. But yeah, Thornbite Staff would actually be perfect with that then.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that as a 2-3 for 4, if he just had Death Touch, it would never actually trigger. They just let him hit them. And
yeah.
That's probably why they had to go this way.
Well, he would be a hell of a blocker, though.
King Midas does not have the patience for that. He's going to run over and he's going to touch everything. Bling, bling, bling.
Bling, bling, bling. Yeah, so anyway, those were your top 5 cards. It was a pretty good event overall. There was a little... Yeah, let's go ahead and skip to that story. There was a little thing, a little news item that came up about this that bears some mentioning. There is a Reddit thread about this, and you know, if it's on Reddit, I'm sure that there's going to be plenty of let's call it reasonable discourse.
Oh, this isn't about the guy who had the top made for him then. Never mind.
No, we'll get to that later.
Okay. Yeah, we need to cover that.
So this particular story has to do with the fact that during the top 8, after the players drafted, they were not allowed to use their phones, talk to their friends, or go to the bathroom without a judge going with them. Now, the folks on Reddit reacted like this was some crazy thing that Sean Catanese, who was the head judge, just, you know, pulled out of thin air. No, that's kind of what you do at a limited GP for the top 8. I mean, the issue is you don't want those players who just drafted finding out what the guy next to them drafted from a spectator, because you want to preserve the integrity of those decks for as long as possible, because, you know, that's part of what we're testing here, is the whole ability to draft and to react to decks that were made from cards that you've seen, but you don't know who has them. And someone chimed in and said, oh, but doesn't everybody in the top 8 always get to see their opponent's deck lists? Well, yeah, but not in limited.
That's a constructed thing.
Yeah, and in constructed, that's totally a thing. And the whole judge escorting you to the bathroom, this is one of those things that, of course, they ran with that and said, oh, how can they possibly force you to do that? Yada, yada, yada. Okay, we've been doing that for a while. I've escorted players to the bathroom after their top 8 draft. It's kind of weird and awkward, but we do it. I mean, you know.
Okay, well, like, Clues, you know, enlighten me here, because this is literally the first time I've heard of anything like this happening, and though it doesn't bother me, I was completely unaware this happened. So how long have you guys actually been doing this for limited GPs?
As long as I know, I don't do a lot of limited GPs, and even when I do a limited GP, I'm very rarely on the top 8, just because you only need a couple of judges for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I as far as I know, it's just standard operating procedure.
Huh. So what she had was a bunch of people running their mouth about something they knew absolutely nothing about, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, Reddit.
You know, if, like, you were really that disturbed by a judge having to escort you to the bathroom, just keep a bottle. I mean, really. Like, it's that simple. Just keep a bottle, because you know what? Like, it's already going to be awkward for both of you, because you know one of you is peeing, and, like, God willing, there's some kind of divide between the toilet and the judge and you, right? But, I mean, you know, just go ahead, be bold, live brave, and just... take care of it right there in the middle of the game, as a matter of fact. Wipe your hands on your pants.
Yeah, you know,
it's... Does that get you a slow play?
I think that probably gets you more than a slow play. That's at least a USC minor.
Because yeah, probably.
It would likely make the people around you uncomfortable, including the judge, because seriously, that's weird. I mean, look, it's not like we're...
Or it would make me uncomfortable because they were laughing, so yeah, I see where you're going with this.
It's not like we're going into the stall with you and staring you in the eye while you do your business.
Oh, God, if you did that, I would never cheat again. Never. Oh, my gosh, that should be the penalty if you're caught cheating. Every event you go to, a judge stares you in the face while you're in the bathroom.
We're just making sure that you don't get outside assistance from someone else. That's it. We're not actually interested in your bodily functions. We don't really care. We just don't want you talking to your buddy who is standing over the shoulder of somebody who is drafting. So.
Yeah, for that kind of special attention all the time, you need to get Judge Premium, which costs more per tournament.
It does.
It actually costs a lot more per tournament, and we're not even going to go into how much. But if you want to know, contact Judge Cast North, and they will tell you.
So, Clues, hypothetically, yeah. Here, okay, I magically make the Pro Tour somehow. I'm in the
okay.
top 8.
Sure.
You're there by some weird happenstance. You have to escort me to the bathroom.
Yep.
So, like, as I'm sitting there, like, urinating, if I look up to you, would you say I am the law?
For
like,
you, Jack,
if you did that,
I would do that.
I would probably destroy the toilet with the force of urine exiting my body. But like, other than that, I'm serious. Like, you guys should all get together in your little cabal meetings that you do, and that should be like the penalty if you're caught cheating. Cause I promise you, I would never cheat. My social anxiety would like kill me if that happened. I would drop out of magic and become a monk.
I think instead of saying I'm the law, which they'd expect, you just start quoting Rorschach. Just actually bring Watchmen with you and go into the speech about your hand around their neck and just see what happens.
But like, I wouldn't want Clues to read it like in a Rorschach voice or anything. I would want his normal voice.
Happy
because
voice.
It's, yeah. And as the pimps and winos look up at me and beg for a, yes, I will look down and say no. As a matter of fact, I will say no.
And then you just say, look, sir, I'm going to need you to pee faster.
Yeah. It's pretty...
I need you to make a pee right now.
I'm going
to
give you a slow pee penalty.
Only the most professional work here on Monday Night Magic.
That's right. Chewy, aren't you glad you missed this week? Aren't you glad?
Well, I mean, at least we have a title.
Do we?
Free flowing. That's the title. I'm done. I've put my work in this week. I've earned another 5-year spot here at Monday Night Magic.
Oh, is that all it takes?
It's pretty much. They keep sending me the show notes.
So listen, I do, as a customer service point here, want to bring up something that did come up a couple of times over the weekend that I can't believe I still have this conversation and I still have to point this out, but apparently people don't know. If you are at a tournament that is run at competitive REL, so this is things that aren't FNM, but even at FNM, I wouldn't do this. If you're at any event that requires a deck list, there is a good chance that you are going to get deck checked. When you are deck checked, the judge will come and take your deck, your sideboard, and where you're keeping your deck and sideboard. If there are other cards in your deck box that could be used in this format, this is a deck list problem, and you're going to get a penalty for it. So stop storing all those bomb rares that you had in the same deck box as the rest of your sealed pool. It's a bad idea. You're going to get a game loss.
So Clues.
Yes, Clues, Senpai.
Does this also include the promo card you get for attending the event?
I'm glad you asked. No, it does not include the promo card that you got for the event. You can keep that in your deck box, provided it is not sleeved the same way as your deck and sideboard. For that matter, you can have cards that aren't legal in the format. That's perfectly fine. You want to keep that Black Lotus in your deck box just, you know, for luck? First of all, don't do that. Seriously, what's wrong with you? And second of all, sure, you can do that.
Your judges really appreciate it when you have an undocumented Black Lotus in the box that they take from you.
No, we would never steal someone's Black Lotus. We would probably give them a stern talking to and tell them, seriously, you just leave that in your box on the table? Have you not seen that people steal decks? Come on. Anyway, so that was the Reddit thing. You guys said there was something else that came up at
this was really cool. This face-to-face games actually posted about this earlier, but there was a guy on Reddit who had a friend who was a jeweler and made him a life-size Sensei's Divining Top.
Oh,
and
yes.
It's gorgeous.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
And I wish the guy was actually taking money to make some, because not that I had it, but I would like to entertain the thought of purchasing my own top. And it spins.
Would be awesome.
Yeah, it's how you know if you're actually asleep or if the movie's not over yet. It's very important.
It is very important.
Well, I thought the movie ended when they took their turn. I mean, do we need to have like a 9-hour intellectual discussion about the implications of this?
No, because they never get to take their turn. That's the point of the top.
Pretty much is the point.
But it was really, really gorgeous, and I highly recommend everybody go check it out. You'll never own one, but you can pretend you can.
Yeah, if one of you guys could dig up that link before we finish up tonight, we'll throw it in the show notes.
Okay,
I
think it's in r/magictcg, I think. It's in there someplace. Anyway, so that was GP Atlanta. It was a glad time was had by most, let's say. I'm sure some people had a bad time because, you know, it's 1,300 players. Surely someone did not enjoy themselves. But it was fine. We were right by the CNN building. It was actually in downtown Atlanta. You know, when Star City goes to Atlanta, they don't usually use the downtown convention center. They're actually just outside of Atlanta. But no, this one was all the way downtown. So, other events that went on, because it wouldn't be Monday Night Magic without us talking about events, right?
And timely news items.
And we're usually just only a week late on timely news items, usually. We had a StarCityGames.com open series take place in Somerset, New Jersey. So SCG Somerset happened. And as usual, it was Standard and Legacy, so Standard on Saturday, Legacy on Sunday. I much prefer the Legacy to the Standard, but that's okay. So did you guys catch any? No, you didn't catch any of this. If you didn't catch any,
it was New Jersey. No, not even because it was like a Magic event. It's New Jersey. Why should I care?
I never want to catch anything in New Jersey.
That's good advice. Try and avoid catching things in New Jersey. So,
did they have the event in a landfill?
It was in New Jersey.
Okay, well, that answers my question. Thank you.
We apologize in advance to anyone who lives in New Jersey. It's a
no,
fire.
No. So sorry you live in New Jersey. Like, you don't even know.
That isn't quite what I meant, but...
So is it all actually like the city from the Mario Brothers movie? Because that's the impression I got.
Look, there are states that I dislike more than New Jersey. I'll just say that.
Kentucky.
I'm not going to name them.
Sub-Carolina?
At this time. But taking first place at SCG Somerset was Charlie Reinhardt with his black-white mid-range deck. I'll be honest, I haven't looked at this deck at all. I had to get back from Atlanta and do a whole bunch of work that I had avoided over the holiday weekend while I was in Atlanta. But looks like it contains lots of black-white cards. Actually, I think we've seen this deck before, and it's still a deck that I would probably play if I were playing Standard.
It's black-white humans with Xanthrid Necromancer, isn't it?
Is there actually, there's not a Xathrid.
I don't think they have the Necromancer.
No, we got Blood Baron, Desecration Demon, Lifebane Zombie, Pack Rat, Sin Collector, and Ghost Dad. Ghost Stepdad, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's cool.
He's not your real dad.
I'm happy to see him in there. I mean, he's not my real dad, but you know, we're working on it. You know, like we're trying to get to know each other better.
He told me to call him Carl, and I can't call
Look,
him
okay,
dad.
Okay, he's there for you most of the time.
Slapping me on the back, calling me best buddy, and then wanting me to go work for Orsov because he has a dealership, and it's just, it's a lot to take in.
He calls me sport. I don't get it. And of course, Elspeth is in there because that kind of got weird real fast, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It was like a misplaced version of Archer.
Sorry about that. Elspeth is in there, of course. And most of the usual things. Thoughtseize, there's a whip, Underworld Connections.
The return of Mutavault. Yay.
Yay. All the Mutavaults. Let's say.
I think it's funny how they're jam-packing Mutavault in every deck that can handle it right now.
Yeah, well.
You know, back in my day when we played with that card, you kids, you had some goblins or you had some fairies to back it up, and now you just like manlands, you kids with your new age like mana bases.
Now you're just like needs to be able to dodge board sweepers, and then I still have a 2/2.
Yay!
Which, as it turns out, is still good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the diversity of the rest of the top 8. I'm gonna run through some decks here. Stop me if you see one you like. In second place, Chris Van Meter had Jund Monsters. In third place, we had Esper Control. In fourth place, we had more different Esper Control. Might be the same Esper Control. I haven't looked at him because I don't like Esper Control. I'll be honest.
One played more better gooderer.
That one played better gooderer than the other. In fifth place, Mono Black Devotion, because we were contractually obligated to work Devotion into the top 8.
Oh, God almighty. All of these are boring so far.
In
the Esper decks are a bit different.
Are they? Well, let's take a look at them.
Yeah, so the third place one has 3 Ashiok in it.
Ooh, spicy. That's awesome.
Yeah. 3 Ashiok, 3 Jace, 2 Elspeth. That's a plan.
Huh. Just the one Aetherling and then some Planeswalkers to wipe things out. Okay. Interesting.
I mean, it's very heavy on the control end, obviously, but having 3 Ashiok is... nothing to sneeze at.
Wait. In the other one, on the other hand, no Ashiok, no Aetherling, no actual creatures.
It's got a Memory Adept, which is kind of like an Ashiok, but it's different.
2 Mutavault and Elspeth.
Those are creatures, guys.
Elspeth is the best creature.
And 2 different Jaces.
arguably Elspeth, Muted Vault, and Thoughtseize are the best cards in the format. So any deck that's running some combination of those is probably going to
Oh, wait, there were two Ashiok in the board of the fourth place one. Gerard was still
yes.
hanging out with Brimaz. Yeah.
To bring his sideboard into the King of Kitties plan. I like it.
That's neat.
Huh.
And you know, I'm glad that the Esper decks aren't the same deck.
Yeah, okay, so they're not the same deck, and I still kind of hate them both, because I don't actually like Esper Control. Let's see, fifth place was Mono Black Devotion. Sixth place, Red Green Monsters.
That deck's boring.
Seventh place, Blue White Red Control.
Yay, that makes me happy.
Arca!
Something we can't say on Monday Night Magic, yeah.
Spoon, yeah!
In eighth place, Red White Burn. I like this one. I like this one a lot. It's
red, white, burn.
Mostly red. It's got white for some War Leader's Helix, some Boros Charm, some Chain to the Rocks.
That's respectable.
Banishing Light out of the sideboard. Oh, Nyx Fleece Lamb. Oh, I'm sorry, Ram, not Lamb. Sheep.
Yay.
Nyx Fleece Ram in the sideboard.
Meh.
Good on it.
Because everybody loves mutton. So, there we go. And that was your top eight for the standard, let's say.
Yeah, it makes me happy that Keranos is actually seeing play, because it's a really fun card to play with.
Yes, even if it's awkwardly worded, it is.
It does work.
You never know what work it's going to do, but you're pretty hopeful, and it works out.
It's totally going to do something.
It's like a bad temp agent, actually.
It's fun. You're like, maybe I'm going to bolt you. Maybe I'm going to draw a card and use that card to bolt you. I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's good times.
Either way, I'm going to kill you. We'll just
Almighty Thor. Good Thanks, times. Thor.
Good, good times.
And that's the top eight.
Hooray! Let's say... I'm trying to pull something up here on Legacy, so you two chat amongst yourselves for a moment. I'll be right with you.
So, how about them cards, Bill?
I think that they're providing an important amount of fiber in my diet. I appreciate them a lot, actually.
Like, do you have to actually use the Crisco, or?
I mean, you know, if they're foil, I mean, I'm not a savage.
I'm not about the foils, man. It's never worked out for me a single day in my life.
Oh, I mean, I don't like them either. That's why the Crisco. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, even with the Crisco there. Yeah, but even with the Crisco, I'm tender. Like, wait. How do you use your cards?
Okay, look, I'm just gonna derail that derailment right now, and let's get back to Legacy. So we also have the Legacy Open on Sunday. You'll never guess what kind of deck took first place, my friends.
One with cards.
It did have cards, yes. Very good.
Are they good cards?
Depends on who you ask.
Are they fly cards?
They are sometimes fly cards, yes.
Ooh.
Are they pretty fly for some cards?
They are, I guess. Anyway, it was blue, white, red, Delver.
America.
Congratulations, Craig. Craig Krimples, you totally used Delver to win. How about that? Awesome.
I mean, you can't hate on somebody for making the correct choice. Delver's just really boring to pilot, so you are, in fact, a boring person, sir. There, I said it. Get mad.
All right, I cannot say whether you are boring or not. I don't want to take away from your victory. Congratulations on winning the Legacy Open. I just am so sick of Delver. All the Delver. Rounding out the rest of the top eight, in second place, we had Shardless Bug. We had a 12-post deck that I was kind of rooting for, but I was more interested in the Red-White Painter deck that was in fourth place. In fifth place, we had a blue-green infect deck piloted by level 2 judge J.D. Near. So he did make the top 8, but didn't get all the way there with the infect deck. I was torn on this one because I hate infect, but I know J.D., so I wanted him to win, but not with that deck.
So you were, like, cheering him on while shaking your fist, like, go J.D., and he thought you were just going to give him a black eye?
Yeah, there was, you know, there was a solitary tear running down my face as I was cheering him on.
I mean, the thug tier is a very good way to encourage your fellow man.
In sixth place, Merfolk.
Fish.
How'd that happen? Gee, I wonder if there are any true name Nemesai in this deck. Let's go take a look, shall we?
There might be four.
Let's see now. Look at that. There's four copies of True Name Nemesis. What do you know?
That's amazing.
Turns out that guy's kind of good if he hits the board.
Do you have to pick the same name each time?
No.
But you should.
Usually.
I love how, like, True Name Nemesis took, like, a very middle-of-the-road legacy deck, and that wasn't really that terrible, but wasn't really that great, and now it's just smack and face all over the place. I love that. That's hilarious.
So where's my True Name Nemesis equivalent for Goblins, huh? How about that?
You've got something pretty hot coming out in M14, I think.
Really?
Yeah, there was a leak earlier in the week. I guess you guys missed that.
Ooh, I did miss that one. We'll get to that in a few minutes, but let's finish up with this Legacy so we can move on to other news. In seventh place, Esper Deathblade, because Deathblade was also contractually obligated to make it into the top eight. And in eighth place, Bug Edric.
Yay.
So Edric, Spymaster of Trest.
He's hanging out with Progenitus, guys.
He totally is. They're best buds, let's say.
They're the best kind of friends, the kind who actually don't bother each other, because you can't.
Right. So there was your top eight. Anything interesting in the ninth? It looks like we had a Dredge deck in 13th. Hey, oh, Jim Davis with the Goblins deck in 14th. Thank you, Jim. He is not the first time we've seen Jim playing Goblins and doing well. So, excellent. Never
the
a fan of
the Legacy lists are fun for seeing cards I didn't know existed.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have never in my life seen Carpet of Flowers, but that's amazing.
It is, yes.
That is
Did
ridiculous.
You say Carpet of Flowers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's a name? Wow, okay.
Yeah. It's a green now enchantment that says during your main phase, you may add up to X mana of one color to your mana pool, where X is the number of islands target opponent controls. It's like Clues' invitational card.
It pretty much is.
That's just for a green. That's pretty sweet.
Yep. From Urza's Saga.
I believe in the power of clues, then.
Huh. So it appears that I'm going to, at some point in the future, travel back in time, win an invitational in Urza's Saga, or before Urza's Saga, to get this card made.
I mean, that's how Tarmogoyf happened, right?
Wait, I've said too much. Never mind, let's move on.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Other...
Da-da-da-da-da.
That was your Star City event in Somerset. Congratulations to everyone who did well, unless they were playing blue. So, what else would you gentlemen like to talk about? What other news did we have this week? Well, there was some news that we probably should have talked about last week, but we didn't. We have the upcoming FNM promos. So, we're in May right now. So, you probably already know this. You can get Tormented Hero. Such torment.
This Friday only.
Yes, this is the last Friday that you can get Tormented Hero. And then in June, Dissolve. Oh.
Yay! So yeah. Cards that make clues unhappy. Yay.
It does do that.
This is a good day.
It's the strictly better, God, what is the name of that counter spell that is one blue blue?
Dissipate. Cancel.
Strictly better cancel.
There are lots of strictly better cancels.
Cancel with Scry stapled to it. But in July, we have some awesome news. The first FNM promo that will be in the new card frame, and it features your buddy and mine, Koth of the Hammer, on Magma Spray.
It's really good art, too.
It really is. And I can't remember, is Koth
makes me happy to see Isaiah Mustafa still getting work.
Koth is not dead to my knowledge.
He's selling deodorant.
Yeah, I thought that he was, I thought his fate was unknown was the issue. That from the storyline, we know that Venser died, and then other stuff that we'll get to later, and that Koth was just missing.
I don't know where he is, but apparently based on this art, he is being that guy who splashes people in the face with his drink when he's upset, only his drink is magma. And that's pretty amazing.
It does look that way.
There's no coming back from that burn, bro.
And in August, one of the most disturbing pieces of artwork I've seen since Sin Collector is Bile Blight.
Yeah, this is what happens when the artist is actually that kid and, or not Andy, like the neighbor, from Toy Story.
Yeah.
Sid, yeah. This is Sid. Good job, Sid.
So, you guys played D&D when you were younger, right?
Yes, I did, along with World of Darkness.
So, you know how...
Oh, man, I still do those things.
You're walking through the dungeon, and the DM, you know, makes you roll a die, and he's like, yeah, you didn't notice, you just walked into a gelatinous cube that was there in that dungeon.
and your life is miserable.
Yeah, this is pretty much what you look like after you've been, you know, dissolved by a gelatinous cube.
Actually, I was just sitting there thinking about this, and I was like, you know, these are probably like some Ravnican guards. They're real young. They were eager for action. They join up with the Boros Legion, and they're like, yeah, like, our lives are going to be so cool. We're going to have so many adventures. And then,
I mean, it kind of...
three of them.
It kind of looks like somebody did not take Indiana Jones' advice and did not keep their eyes closed and did look at the Ark. They just kind of melted. This guy's a puddle, and it's...
This guy is a puddle.
Kids, you never look at the Ark.
Also, there is so much of him running out of there. He was probably a really fat guy before this happened.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is do not be a targeted creature. This is what happens.
Yes.
And also, don't let your friends be targeted if they have your name.
Friends don't let friends target friends.
This is the buddy system, you guys. If you let your friend get targeted, you're both going to get punished.
And so, like, because there were three of them, this was actually, like, their finest hour in a war movie. So, like, they should have thrown, like, the fat wisecracking guy behind them and just ran.
Well, and they did. Unfortunately, he got targeted, and they're all named Steve.
This guy was 2 days from retirement.
Oh, man.
Oh, Clues, don't tell me that. Then I feel guilty.
So those are your upcoming F&M.
Oh, God, my heart. Why do I say such horrible things?
We totally forgot to, mention those when they happened.
Fortunately, so. You already knew almost all of them because we get these things 4 months out, but now we've added Bile Blight to the list.
Yep, pretty much. So, other news. There was apparently someone got a hands-on demo of Duels 2015 that apparently was not as locked down as the hands-on demo of Duels 2015 that I played over at PAX East. But, you know, that thing's got to be coming out any time now, right? So,
yep. Presumably soon.
Bunch of cards were apparently spoiled from that, and this may be where there's a goblin that I'm going to like.
Yeah, hold on. Let me...
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, if you look it up on Mythic Spoiler, you can actually go ahead and see quite a few things coming from M14. There's a rare goblin.
M15.
Or M15. I don't know. There's
M the future.
M the future. But yeah, in M15, there is a rare goblin that should interest you, Clues, if you would like to read it, perhaps.
Oh, how interesting. This is Goblin Rabble Master. He costs 2 and a red for a goblin warrior. Now that's interesting. They gave him a job. That's something they've been avoiding lately. You usually just get one thing. But no, this is a goblin warrior. Other goblin creatures you control attack each turn if able. Now others, so he doesn't force himself to attack.
Let's be real, we were gonna do it anyway.
We pretty much were, because we'll get to more of that. Oh, by the way, he's a 2/2, and he is not legendary, so you can have several of these, that's just fine. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a 1/1 red goblin creature token with haste onto the battlefield. So the beginning of combat on my turn. Interesting.
Which is before attackers are declared.
It is, in fact, before attackers are declared. Whenever Goblin Rabble Master attacks, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking goblin. So he's kind of like a pile driver, only not as broken.
He's essentially attacking as a 3/2, plus more.
Yeah, he brings buddies. Yeah, this guy is in the buddy system.
I think we should all maybe go around and pick a card or two to talk about, since this is probably one of the bigger leaks and has a majority of things that are worth talking about.
This is a lot.
Yeah, do you guys mind if I go ahead and maybe talk about
something? No, go right ahead.
I haven't seen this yet, so go ahead.
Really okay, enjoy this goblin.
Go look up Mythic Spoiler, it's all there. So this one really struck me as extremely interesting, because even though it's one of these cards you're going to have to work for it to be good, I just want you guys to listen to this and tell me what you think about it.
Sure.
Chasm Skulker, there's a lot going on with octopuses this time around. I don't know and I don't want to ask questions, but anyways. Chasm Skulker, it's 2 colorless and a blue. It's a creature squid horror rare, and it's a 1/1. Whenever you draw a card, put a 1/1 counter on Chasm Skulker. All right, arguably that's a pretty good ability to start with, especially with Legacy where you have Brainstorm and things like that that could fire this off very quickly and make it enormous. But anyways, when Chasm Skulker dies, put X 1-1 blue squid creature tokens with Island Walk onto the battlefield, where X is the number of 1-1 counters on Chasm Skulker. Now, forgive me if I'm wrong here, but does this seem, like, ridiculously overpowered, or am I just being idiotic?
This guy actually seems kind of good.
Yeah, like, it's just like I was just saying a moment ago. Not only is this going to be a concurrently growing problem in formats like Legacy, where Brainstorm's a thing, and, you know, you have other tricky cards that let you draw a lot of cards for very little investment, but there's never going to be a moment that you want to trade with this guy, because it's really just going to aggregate your opponent's board position and make it even worse than what you already had. And, you know, you can chump block this thing all day long. That's cool. But if you don't deal with it, it's going to get enormous, and pretty soon, no matter what you block it with, it's just going to be able to eat it alive. So I think this card is actually very, very good, and I think it's going to be problematic in several different formats. There's one more I want to talk about.
Before we leave this guy, I will say that the solution to him is anything that exiles. Because that is a dies trigger, so if you exile it, it's just fine.
Oh yeah, like Path, Source to Plowshares, any of that's gonna keep you safe. But still, like, that's a very curious card, and I highly suggest that people keep their eyes on it. And from my perspective, I'm more surprised more people aren't flipping out about this, I guess because not a lot of people are aware of the leak. But Void Snare, it's a blue, it's a sorcery, and return target null and permanent to its owner's hand. Okay, so it's not an instant. I get that. But being able to return anything for a single blue on your turn is very, very strong.
It certainly is.
Yeah, I mean, that solves planeswalkers, that solves problematic equipment, that solves lots of just random little things that seem like they could be a serious issue, especially in this very aura-heavy format that we're in right now. That seems like it could be quite advantageous for control decks that want a one or two of to just, like, take care of something for a second and make all the auras drop off and garbage like that. So, yeah, that seems really good to me. I'm surprised do you guys have the list up in front of you? I can just copy and paste
it. I am looking over it now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, so that's all I got. Those are my concerns.
I'm actually digging, as weird as it's to say about a core set, I'm digging the flavor of them jumping all over again. Like, previously, you know, we had the rings and stuff, but this is straight up giving us creatures that are, like, the soul of Zendikar, and, like, that's kind of neat.
Oh, yeah. I like that a lot.
Like, soul of Zendikar is all like, yo, I'm from Zendikar. You remember Zendikar? We might be going back someday. It's kind of got a problem.
There might be Eldrazi. You remember the Eldrazi? You remember Nyssa? She kind of, that was her fault.
Yeah.
You should come and do something about that.
Hey guys, I know I look like Mossman and he's not gotten work in years, but you know guys, I kind of need some help here. No, Mossman, go back, Mossman. You're silly. I'm not Mossman, guys. Like, please.
The name is Swamp Thing. Get it right. It's a book.
Alan Moore isn't writing me anymore, so you should take me seriously.
But yeah, so we've got the Soul of Zendikar, or the Soul of Ravnica. I wonder if we're gonna get a Soul of Kamigawa. That'd be neat and random.
Stop making me want things, Bill. Please.
I try.
Oh my gosh. I feel like we're probably going back to Kamigawa sooner than later after, especially with the, Cons of Trakir.
Yes.
I feel like having a Mongol themed set leading into a Kamigawa set would be very well balanced.
So, Bill, were there any of these cards that you wanted to talk about? I have a couple that I'd like to hit real fast.
You go ahead first.
So I find this Indulgent Tormentor quite interesting. Now, bear in mind, folks, everything we're telling you, usually on Monday Night Magic, we don't really talk about things unless they're official spoilers, but Jack opened this can of worms, and so we're doing it anyway. These are probably legit, quite frankly. Indulgent Tormentor, for 3BB, you get a creature demon that is a 3/3 and is rare, and he has flying. 5 mana for a 3/3 flyer, Clues. That sounds awful. Well, at the beginning of your upkeep, draw a card unless your opponent sacrifices a creature or pays 3 life. That sounds kind of good.
Yep, I like it.
I mean, that's going to kill Mike. That's something. I mean, that's how that works. Mike is the host on the Mana Pool who manages to kill himself with every demon no matter what.
Yeah, but this doesn't hurt you. This hurts your opponents.
No, give it time. He'll find a way.
He'll find a
Mike will find a way.
All right.
Also of entertaining note is the Siege Dragon, which, it's a 7-mana dragon, so it does awesome stuff, who cares? What's really important is that this is the Kool-Aid man in dragon form, because
We'll read him.
He's a 5 red dragon. He's a 5/5 flyer. And when Siege Dragon enters the battlefield, destroy all walls your opponents control.
Oh,
not creatures with defender, walls. Specifically the creature type walls. And when Siege Dragon attacks, if your opponent has no walls, it deals 5 damage to each creature without flying defending player controls. So he's going to bust down their walls, and then he's going to spit flaming Kool-Aid on all of them.
Take your vitamin C, kids.
Oh, yeah.
Or else.
So.
Yeah, he seems kind of good.
That's terrifying, actually.
He's not going to see any, like, you know, standard play, but it's still awesome.
The other thing that bears... The other thing that bears mentioning is it appears that Convoke is going to be coming back.
Oh, yay. I was looking for this. Yep, you're right. There it is.
Yay, Convoke.
That's interesting.
That indicates a lot of support for token-based strategies, actually.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, yay. Boy, all of these great cards from... Aww.
Oh, hey, guys, we have Ratchet.
Populate. Sorry, Populate. We're sorry.
I don't know why anybody doesn't take me seriously.
It's okay. You got 3 months. It'll be great.
All right. So those are some things. Also some stuff. Speaking of things and stuff, if you don't like actual paper magic, but you like power, Vintage Masters is a thing. The whole set for Vintage Masters is out. I feel like it was out last week. Am I wrong?
I think they posted it last week, but I think it was not Monday.
Did we talk about it last week?
I don't think probably we talked about it, but we did have a lot of other stuff to talk about between, you know, the guest and the new tournaments and all that stuff. We might have just not discussed it.
Well, anyway, Vintage Masters, it's like Modern Masters, only it's vintage, and it's totally online instead of not being online. So it's MTGO only, because the reserved list is a thing. God, I hate the reserved list. So they can't reprint a bunch of these cards in actual form. But if you would like to pay them the low, low price of, I think, what is it, like $8 a pack? It's like $7 or $8 a pack. You too can play with vintage cards.
Yeah, but look, that price point may sound outrageous, but these packs are moving. Like,
oh yeah,
very easily. Like, with a, I think it's 1 in an entire case of product of Cracking Power. And especially given the amount, sheer amount of legacy staples present in this thing, like, I'm actually concerned about how the commons and uncommons panned out, because that was what everybody was talking about that nobody seemed to yell about when this set finally dropped. Yeah, like, this set's gonna move regardless of, like, what's inside of it. So, go do it, kids. It's gonna be the cheapest point you'll ever have to bust in the legacy.
You could get a killer whale.
I was about to comment on killer whale as well.
You could totally get a killer whale.
Like, directly. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, great minds, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, it's frickin' killer whale. It's a whale that can get flying.
It's the blue card that clues approves of.
It's madness is what it is.
So anyway, what do you think about Vintage Masters as a legacy player clues?
I think it doesn't affect me, because it's MTGO.
Okay, cool. Moving on.
I don't really play MTGO. More on that later. If I did, I think it is going to have a nice effect on Legacy Online, most certainly. It might actually create some interest in more Vintage Online, I guess. I mean, Vintage Online wasn't possible until now, right? Because there was no way to actually get power that wasn't in some phantom cube draft.
There was no format for Vintage Online.
Yeah.
Like, at all.
Well, now we do.
Yay!
So, scrolling over the gallery of these things, are the ones that have certain words, like owner and target permanent and the like, highlighted, taken from Magic Online and a specific thing?
Yes. So the ones, so the ones that have, certain keywords and abilities highlighted, those are screenshotted out of MTGO, is my understanding.
Okay.
Now, the artworks that you're seeing here are not all the artworks and cards that are actually going to be used. I don't know why they didn't actually do that, but...
Yeah, that was my confusion, because they've clearly bothered to put in new stuff for some of the cards, but not the rest of them.
Yes.
So, I don't know. All that really matters is that Goblin Goon is still the Hulk, so we're good. Good job,
that's,
you guys.
That's it. That's the only thing that matters.
Well, I mean, Goblin Settler's showing a little bit more leg than I thought would be appropriate, but here we are.
When you get the husky laugh out of clues, you know it's a good one.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. That's Vintage Masters. Play it or don't. I still just have no opinion on the whole MTGO stuff.
I don't either. I think the entire product's garbage, and I have no incentive to actually crank it back up again.
I like MTGO when it comes to things like limited, because it's there are very other few other opportunities. Just sit down and draft. Just I've got, you know, 3 hours. It's a random time of day. I'm going to draft. And I can see all the utility of it for, like, practicing for a big tournament. I don't see the appeal of building a vintage collection on Magic Online, given I'm not playing vintage, and two, I would not want to have, like, as expensive as it is to have copies of your set in standard or modern, the idea of having a second copy of your vintage deck so you can playtest it is completely absurd to me.
And there's just no mystique about it. Like, you know, when you see actual power or even, like, really drop-dead, gorgeous, amazing proxies for vintage tournaments, you're like, oh, wow, this format's cool. But online, I mean, as Houston from Tap and Sack said, people don't even like foils online. Like, it just, it takes away all the cool mystique and joy of actually owning those cards.
They are funny looking.
Yeah.
Okay, well, hey, this is a perfect time to interject something since we're talking about all these Eternal formats. If you're interested in playing actual in-paper Eternal formats, my local shop, Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina, it's a great shop, you should check it out, is having a Eternal weekend in June. So June 13th, 14th, and 15th, they're having Legacy Friday night. It's regular REL. It's like FNM, but it's not actually the FNM event because you can't do that. But Legacy Friday night, competitive REL Legacy Saturday, competitive REL Vintage on Sunday. So, wow. It's competitive, but it's unsanctioned because there's not enough power locally. So you're allowed 15 proxies for that. And then if you scrub out of that later in the day, we're doing another, vintage tournament with no limit on proxies. So if you just want to try vintage, get a Sharpie and some basic lands and you can do it.
Nope, get Avery Labels. They make the best proxies. I promise.
Okay.
Admittedly, I am entertained by the prospect of writing Dryad Arbor on an island.
Yes, by all means, use all islands for all of your proxies. I approve of this. But anyway, coming up in June, that's going to happen. I mention it here just because no one could stop me. So, other news that is in mysteriously in our show notes. Do you guys remember Gavin?
I do.
Yeah, that was a while back.
Used to be here on Monday Night Magic, and proof that people who are on Monday Night Magic go to do awesome things. He now works for Wizards of the Coast as a developer.
Yeah.
He has a blog. And it's worth mentioning because earlier this year, Gavin discovered that he had a, like, page-a-day calendar from 1997 that is a Magic card a day, and it has, like, trivia about the card or the storyline or the art, and he's going through them all. So each day, you get to see something new from a calendar from 1997. Cause it just so happens that the dates actually, match up pretty well, to now. So.
Hooray. It's actually been a lot of fun to watch him post them day by day on Twitter because a lot of the advice that they give you is terrible.
Yes.
Absolutely horrible. Like, we're talking, these are four color combo decks. Really bad. But it's really fun just from the flavor and just to see how far the art has come to.
Yeah, definitely true. So we'll have a link to Gavin's blog. He's also tweeting them if you would prefer your information in Twitter form. But if you're on Twitter and you're not following Gavin, what's wrong with you? Go follow Gavin.
Yeah, get on that. He's awesome.
He is awesome. Speaking of awesome, you know, conspiracy's coming.
Our store is actually doing a Machiavellian pre-release for that where you're encouraged to dress up. And everybody has a hidden agenda to accomplish that night. So I'm super excited.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a magic LARP.
Yeah. Like our store is, it's actually pretty small, but we're a very close knit community. So if somebody comes up with a good idea, usually everybody's like, yeah, like, you know, give me a new way to be Dave or Steve in this case. And so we all were like, well, hey, why don't we have like this big costume fun thing that you can dress up if you want to? And you have like an actual conspiracy you have to carry out with either yourself or more people during the night. And everybody went for it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, one of the conspiracies was, like, buying somebody a milkshake or something like that. So a lot of the stuff is to encourage camaraderie and interacting between people. But it, when you get your conspiracy, you're not allowed to tell anybody what it is. So you have to make it the entire evening without telling somebody your conspiracy. And if you do that, you get some kind of giveaway at the end of the night, which is really cool.
Cool, cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
These are the kinds of things that take a little bit of extra effort on your store's part, but it keeps people coming back, and it makes things memorable, and it's way better than running the maze.
Absolutely.
Yes, this is absolutely true.
Good times all around. I guess we should probably mention when Conspiracy comes out, huh?
Yeah, so the release weekend is, what, the 7th and 8th of June? So it's just around the corner.
So if your shop isn't doing anything cool like this, good on that. It'll be awesome.
All right. So speaking of Conspiracy, since it's coming out, there were a couple of articles went up on the Mothership last week. One is from Sean Main about designing Conspiracy, and one is by Dave Humphreys about developing Conspiracy. So if you want to find out more about how this came to be, there's a good place to look. So enjoy that.
Hooray.
Hooray.
Yeah. What do you guys think about Conspiracy in general at this point?
Honestly, I'm really excited at the prospect of a bunch of cheap reprints that are playable in Commander. Other than that, I think it's going to be extremely difficult to draft, if you want me to be sincere with you. And I don't like the conspiracies. I think any kind of advantage when it's free is still a very broken advantage. So I think the set's cool, but I think they decided to opt for gimmicks more than actually making like an enjoyable play experience. And this set is chock full of gimmicks.
I am slightly concerned that it's going to suffer from what I'm going to describe as the archenemy problem. It's something that sounds wicked cool, and the first time you do it, it's kind of awesome, and then you don't really end up doing it after that because it's just too much trouble.
Yeah, and see, like, another concern that I have with this is, I know Sheldon Menery actually specifically addressed these cards earlier today. I haven't had time to read his response on them. But there's a lot of cards in this set that are gonna be really, really, really cool, and then you take them home. Like, the Deal Broker that, is in the set as well. That's gonna be so awesome when you're at the store, because I call this the most meta Magic card ever. Because you're going to be able to, like, screw with people's heads and do lots of bargaining that's going to net you a serious advantage. But what do you do with this card when you take it home? Because it actually is extremely mediocre.
And I get that completely.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at with this set is, like, it looks really, really fun if you draft it as, like, this conspiracy cube, which I think was what WotC was really wanting to do with this. They were wanting to make cube accessible to Luddites. But the problem you're inherently going to have there is there's a lot of this product that you're literally not going to be able to enjoy unless you go through the effort of building a cube. And the problem from that is, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it's difficult to find even one person to play Commander with when I go to my store. Or like one person to play something that's not standard with in my store. So the very prospect that they risked this entire like product's concept on this format that some people play, like, I don't like that. Like, that kind of strikes me as odd. And there's a lot of wasted potential by writing on the back of gimmicks, I think. And it's not sloppy, like, you know, any of the conspiracies and things like that are extremely well executed, and a lot of the cards actually interact with each other very well. I, even as forced as the, politics mechanic is, there's never gonna be a dull moment with that, so I'm cool with that. But, they really, really, really rode hard on the back of conspiracies and gimmicks in the set, and I don't particularly like that. They really rode hard on it being a draft format, and that, to me, is going to alienate a lot of people.
This is possible. I think it's going to be interesting. The folks who have encountered it, who have actually played it, have all said it's great. We'll see if it has staying power. I think it will definitely be fun the weekend it releases. So
yeah, that's where I'm coming down on it. I think it's going to be like when an unset would come out and people would go to an un-pre-release and they'd have an absolutely amazing time. And then they would take these cards home and they would sit in their binders that they would sit in a box forever because you're never going to use them again. Like, they're just, I think my biggest gripe with it is that because of the gimmicks, it's like, I understand the comparison to Arch Enemy. For me, it's kind of like when Plane Chase is going on, where you're playing a different game.
Yeah.
There's just enough messing with it that you're playing a different game, and that doesn't appeal to me. I'm glad that they're doing things like this, and I'm glad that they're not doing these things in a main set where, you know, if you're really serious, you don't want to do these things, you can completely ignore this thing. You're still getting your summer set, everything is still going on like normal. But when I look at this and I see all of these, like, weird draft gimmicks, which, you know, a lot of the reason I like draft is the fact that it's a heavily skill-based format that has enough of a luck element that, you know, you don't just end up playing chess every time. But when you have all the gimmicks, it's a little harder. And then, honestly, it's all this stuff where I have to write things down that bugs me.
Huh.
I don't like the pen and paper aspect of it. Like, for instance, there's this one land in the set, a legendary land, like Paliano the High City,
yeah.
Yeah, well, during the draft, you reveal it, and then you have to interrupt the guy to your right, get him to pick a color. You pick a color, and then you have to interrupt the guy to your left to pick a color. And you have to write all this stuff down, because you're not going to be playing against those people, necessarily. And they're not going to remember what they picked. They're busy trying to make their decks, and you're interrupting what they're doing and what you're doing. And you're consulting this piece of paper that says what your, you know, your, the colors that it makes are. There's just so much bookkeeping that it bugs me.
Yeah, and see, that's actually something that really concerns me too, is do either one of you just get this innate feeling that conspiracy drafts are going to take forever? Like, you're going to start at 7 if you're really lucky, and you might be done by 5 the next morning.
Well, yes and no. So the way they're going to operate is you're going to have a draft with 8 people, ideally. I don't know what happens if you don't have 8 people, because then it gets just awkward. And then you break in after the draft, you break into 2 groups of 4 and play a multiplayer game, basically last man standing in that group of 4. And then that's it. You don't, like, go up against anybody else.
Well, yeah, because group games, especially with decks that aren't, like, power-tuned, just take forever. I mean, I love them, but they take forever. Like, that's going to be your night. You're going to spend, like, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, rather than the usual, like, 20 drafting. Because there are going to be all these stops where it's like, wait, no, don't check the cards yet. I got to pick my colors for this land. Or, wait, I want to look at your pack, and I'm going to dig through your pack. And, like, it's just going to be stopping all the time. And then eventually you get done drafting it, and then you build your decks, and then you just say later to, like, half the table and go play something else. It's just, I think it'll be fun once. I do not see myself buying standalone packs of this ever, and I think that once I can't get to, like, a local store event doing it, I am not going to be running these on my own. It's really hard to get friends together to play a game. Getting friends together for, like, 3 or 4 hours to draft a deck, you know, rebuilding the packs if you are trying to use them like a cube. You might as well just actually build a cube. And that might be the point. It might be to get people to think about what you would do to build a cube and build the cube environment. But for me, it's not for me. But hopefully, for the people that it is for, they will really enjoy it. And then, you know, whatever gimmick or strange set we do next year, that'll be for me. That said, all of this, the PR and everything that's gone into this has been so amazing that I don't care that this is a product that I'm probably not going to buy. I'm having fun.
Yeah. Agreed. They've done an amazing job. Here's how I think conspiracy will go for me, because I don't really like to draft. It's not really my cup of tea. I draft with friends because they enjoy drafting and I like hanging out with friends, so I do it from time to time. I suspect I will buy like a box or two of this under the theory that, yeah, at some point I'll get together with some friends and, you know, we'll have a night and we'll, you know, order some pizza and we'll draft some conspiracy. It'll be a great time. And instead they will sit on my shelf for like 3 years.
Well, you know, Will, you made a reference earlier to Include. This is going to be one of those sets where if you can get a box for cheap, like years from now, you can blow your store away and having a great time with it as well. So like, I think there might be a certain longevity to these products we're not looking at. But at the same time, like, I just, I'm literally only looking forward to this set for an exploration. And that makes me feel like a bad person.
I see myself buying a whole bunch of singles.
Or like a foil brainstorm.
Yeah,
like,
I can
finally own
foil brainstorm. Yeah.
I think I'm going to buy some singles from this set. I'm going to look over the final list, find the cards that I think would be fun in a commander deck, and just buy those. Just buy one of them and go ahead with that. Like, the Marchesa, the Black Rose, that looks fun. Straight up, you know, the dethrone mechanic is neat. the way that the games will play out with that is neat. It's another three-color legendary creature that I can consider because, honestly, there aren't that many Grixis-colored commanders that I've had that much fun with.
Yeah, of them cow under Dothrax and Mundar in terms of power as well, so yeah. I agree with you there. And coincidentally, she empowers him even further, which is awesome.
So, we'll have fun with this. I am definitely not going to care either way about Dak Faden existing. So, have fun, buddy.
Yeah, I still think he's going to rear his ugly little head in Legacy, but that's neither here nor there. So, that's...
Legacy will be fine.
That's conspiracy. Things and stuff. I am not necessarily comfortable. Well, no, I'm sorry. I was skipping a news item there. We missed something that should have been mentioned in the Duels 2015 trailer earlier. Apparently, and I'm not really sure exactly how to pronounce this. Is it Obnixilus?
I have always thought of Obnixilus.
Okay, Obnixilus apparently appears in the Duels 2015 trailer. And if I'm not mistaken, is Obnixilus, is he one of the demons that has part of Liliana's soul?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, so he's not involved in that?
Obnixilus' deal is that he used to be a planeswalker and he lost a spark. And he's really grumpy about it.
Well, wouldn't you be?
I mean, I would be pretty grumpy.
So what we're looking at is probably another demon walker? Demon walker. That sounds like a bad comic from the 90s.
I mean, if he's getting a new spark, then yeah, sure, that could be awesome. I mean, Garuk's got to punch something. I mean, realistically, that's his job in this set, right? Garuk is here. He's got to punch something. It's not going to be Liliana because they're probably never going to do that again. So I really don't know what he's going to punch.
Yes, you're correct on that. Did you guys ever see the altar where all it was he was asking her out to prom?
Aww.
Yeah. No, I have not seen that.
Like, at the height of that entire discussion's ongoing S-Fest on Twitter, I forgot who it was, but he just altered it to where he was in a tuxedo, and he had, like, this big heart that was like, will you go to prom with me? And that's all it was.
He just wants a friend.
All right, and for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, never mind. So, I don't really want to dredge that back up. So, this next bit, I am not super comfortable with really covering, because I don't want to spoil.
Have you read it?
I have read it, but I'm sure there are people who haven't.
I did that.
Jack.
Yeah, you just
did that. Yep. Oh! So now that
just log the time. If Chewie wants to delete it, he can delete it. Otherwise, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
That'll be an editorial decision.
That will be an editorial decision. We will leave it in Chewie's hands. Some things happen. If you're not going to read the Theros magic novel, Godsend Part 1 and 2, there is now a Cliff Notes version on the mothership. Feel free to go read that at your own peril. I have now read both parts of the Theros novel. I didn't really care for the ending. I thought it was a little... It felt forced. It felt rushed.
I read the plot summary here, and I read the plot summary on the wiki. I have not actually read the book. But just from, like, an analysis of the story and the structure, it feels really weak to me. Yeah. I mean, the actual presentation could be amazing, and I will never fault it on that without actually reading it, but it seems like they decided they wanted to do something at the end of the story, and then they missed their main opportunity to do something, so they found a way to work it in afterwards, and it just seems kind of weak.
I'm going to interject here as well, because I've pretty much read the plot summary. I agree with Bill entirely, but I mentioned this elsewhere. I kind of saw this coming. Because I'm sure you gentlemen are up on your mythology with Grecian and Roman myths and all that good stuff. The gods were not necessarily very nice people in those stories.
Usually
they were extremely spiteful and jealous. And so because of that, I kind of figured something like this was going to happen. I just thought it was going to be a hairier planeswalker.
That would have been more gutsy.
Yeah, if I'm being completely sincere with you, especially since, like, you've had that particular walker go through, you know, vengeance and all this other stuff, and he kind of took on this good guy mentor role of a couple of heroes, and he specifically sought her out and all this other stuff, because then that would have allowed the possibility for Elspeth to experience a similar path and perhaps make not such good decisions, if you know what I'm getting at, especially since it seems we have a lot of walkers that are going dark lately. They decided to kill the person in particular that to me was the weakest choice. I also didn't like this from a marketing perspective because Elspeth was a very strong female lead that was not hypersexualized.
Yeah, this is dumb.
Yeah, like,
I'll come out and say that's dumb.
Yeah, like, Elspeth was like the one character that, even though she was one dimensional, she was cool one dimensional. She was like the strong, dependable, like, hero that had her doubts. And that was an amazing thing to market to the growing female player base we have. And you know, I know me, Mr. like, crude, not safe for work stuff on my blog, that probably sounds really ironic. But, Elspeth was a respectable character and not just like a female character. Like, you could, I know men that say that was their favorite walker because A, she was hot, but B, she was also like a character that you could fall in love with. Like, she was somebody that you really wanted to believe in, that believed they were doing the right thing even when everything else seemed lost. And so killing like that, taking that from people, like taking that away from your consumer base is an extremely poor marketing decision on a lot of levels.
I am unconvinced that we've seen the last of Elspeth. The way it actually ends leaves wiggle room for shenanigans.
Yes, and again, I would like to go back to the mythology perspective on this as well, because what happened to heroes when they died? They weren't gone for good. They went to hell or Hades or whatever translation of the word you want to use, and they kind of stuck around for a while. And sometimes they came back.
Now,
so, yeah.
Something else that kind of struck me about this book that I thought of over the weekend, because there was a Twitter storm about some things, as Twitter is often wont to do, and I don't really want to get into that. I don't want to derail our conversation with that. This is a podcast about magic. I don't know if this book passes the Bechdel test.
That's very unfortunate, given the protagonist is a female.
Yeah, I've got to go back and read it again, but if it does, it barely does.
I mean, I don't think the Bechdel test matters nearly as much as other people do.
Oh, I agree. It's just, well,
it's wrong if it can't, like, in terms of this is a lead female character in a game that desperately needs to work on that. Because when you look at all of your planeswalkers, I mean, there are a number of female planeswalkers that aren't human, but realistically, if the humans are the flagships of it, we have three female human planeswalkers, and two of them are played up for their sexiness.
Yes.
So what do we got here? And even Elspeth, in her full armor, did the butt shot for the Theros card.
Oh, yes.
So aside from the fact that that's actually impossible in armor, they did a little bit of that, but for the rest of the time, they've been very tasteful with it, and now she's the one that bites it. I mean, they're not going to kill Liliana, they're not going to kill Chandra, so here we are.
Yeah. So, there it is. Read it, let's say. It or the notes.
I kind of wish that, you know, like, I wish they'd killed a Johnny, because it feels like his story is done. Like, he's done it. He's had the past, he's had the present, he's had all of that. And if they killed a Johnny off, just from a marketing perspective, you could transition Elspeth into being the evergreen white planeswalker. Because they're not going to do it with Gideon. So, it'd be something. I mean, a Johnny's been two other colors. So that leaves Gideon as our only, like, 100% white planeswalker. And, I mean, from a marketing perspective, Gideon is an old steroid man. So that's not quite as good. And that's magic.
That is magic. So, hey, speaking of, let's say the, ever-growing, female demographic in magic. Hey, we've got a cosplay to talk about. And no, it's probably not what you're thinking. Probably not.
Oh, but we can dream, Clues. We can dream.
Yeah, well, in this case, it is, believe it or not, a Sliver Queen cosplay.
Dreams do come true.
Yeah, it's quite a costume.
It's awesome.
Like, shockingly good.
Oh, yeah. This reminds me a lot of the kinds of costumes that you'll run into at places like DragonCon, where they go all in on it, and it's sweet. You should look at the pictures that will be in the show notes. Also, you'll determine what happens when Samus Aran fights Sliver Queen.
That's right. And what happens?
There's a lot of artwork on that on the internet already, gentlemen.
What happens
live action?
What happens when Sliver Queen finds Waldo? That's answered in here as well.
We then have to find Waldo again, but it's harder. Good times.
Yes, indeed.
Oh God, Sliver Queen has two Gumbies. Yeah, just go look at that. Just stop what you're doing. I don't care. If you're driving and listening to the podcast, pull over. Pull out your phone.
Steve. Come on,
just check it out.
We know you're on the bus.
I'm just saying, like, I really am going to imagine now that Sliver tokens are represented by Gumby, and that's amazing. It's wonderful. This is what dreams are made of, everyone. Dreams do come true.
So we're about to close out here, gents?
Well, we have two more quick things. One cool, is...
I have a self-scumbag story I need to tell, think.
Okay, well, let's knock these two out real quick. So first of all, okay. We have a message from our good friend Steve on the bus.
Hey, Steve.
So Steve writes to tell us that, he was running behind on the podcast, so he only recently caught up with some things that we said, and he gets a lot of strange looks for laughing on the bus. Just finished the one that mentions the GP Sydney playmat, and I thought I should clear up a couple of things for you. The reason you can't see the spider on there is that they are everywhere, you just don't see them. I can guarantee that at least half a dozen poisonous spiders are within 10 yards of my computer. Redback spiders, cousins of the Black Widow, I understand. There are heaps under our deck. So, this is Steve from Australia, in fact.
They measure spiders in heaps in Australia, guys. That's not cool.
And the thing that looks like a koala is, in fact, a drop bear. Unlike the other images on the playmat, that one is not far from reality. Drop bears are a bit like a cross between a koala, a sloth, and a Bengal tiger. They hang out in trees and simply drop on their prey. Scary stuff. Here's a link. And he has put a link in here. And here, let me paste this link into
chat. Why the
chat.
Bloody hell would anybody live in Australia?
If you know your history, you know they didn't do it on purpose, Jack.
So go there and just look at the picture in the upper right-hand corner and tell me your reaction.
I mean, I don't care if they started off as a penal colony, okay? It's 2014. Boats and planes exist.
Click on the link and you'll know why we sent people there to die. Yeah, I don't want that. I would rather Sam Fisher drop on me from above. At least then I might have a chance. This
well, listen,
terrifying.
If you scroll down, they show one dropping, and he is gonna mess up whatever he
wants.
Oh,
wow. Look at
him.
Look at how he drops. It's so majestic and terrifying. It's like it's raining death.
What do you think his thoughts are as he's falling?
I think as he falls, in his mind, he's just going, life is like a hurricane in Australia.
That's
and then the song keeps going.
So here we go. Imagine a koala that was bitten by a vampire. And now
radioactive
have,
vampire.
Now you have a pretty good idea of...
he's getting his +1/+1 counter, whether you like it or not.
Allow me to read...
and now he's drop bear, the living vampire.
Allow me to read a passage here. According to previous studies, drop bears hunt by ambushing ground-dwelling animals from above. Once prey is within striking range, the drop bear will plummet several meters out of the tree, skillfully latching onto the neck of its victim.
That is horrifying.
And it's so cute.
Oh, so check this out. Drop bears are known to be very territorial. They do not stray far from a relatively small number of trees in close proximity that are used as a hunting ground. So I'm imagining like little signs saying warning drop bear, and by the time you see the sign, it's too late.
Your entire life becomes Brent Sienna from PvP.
Oh god, they're those hands from Legend of Zelda that take you to the front of the dungeon, only instead they sort of shiv you in the neck and kill you.
shiv you in the neck. That's quality stuff.
Yeah,
drop bear don't care.
Terrifying.
He's just getting, look at him. Look at him. He's just going to drop it. Look at that little guy just dropping out of the tree. Drop bear don't give a crap.
Anyway.
And he shouldn't. We're
going to include a link to the drop bear article in the show notes.
As if you needed even less of a reason to go to Australia.
So in case you don't want to sleep at night, go read this article.
Could you just good, like guys. Imagine a drop bear in somebody's room? And like you're sitting there and you think you hear something in the closet, and then all you feel is just this creeping furry mass coming up over the bed, and this voice says, several meters above you, that's all the ever farther I am away, and it just creeps away into the night.
Only if it has an Australian accent.
Crikey!
Yeah, you
exactly.
You wake up in the morning and there's a selfie that's been taken on your phone and it's being held by the drop bear. It's just there on your bed.
Now that's 21st century horror for you right there, guys.
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Oh man, and just for added trauma, if you go to the Drop Bear Wikipedia page, one of the sea alsos is Phantom Kangaroo. So, you really don't want to mess with that entire continent.
Yeah, they will pretty much mess you up.
Oh, horrifying.
So yeah.
Thanks, Steve.
Drop bears. If you Just go to Google image search and just put in Drop Bear. That's all I'll say.
Horrifying. But yeah, anyway, thanks, Steve. We really appreciate you getting back at us for messing with you on the bus. Now we can't sleep.
That was Steve from the bus.
Live reporting from the edge of humanity.
I guess Steve has to ride the bus to keep a hunk of sheet metal between him and the trees above him at all times.
I'm thinking this is the Mad Max bus that he's actually on, and that's just how he gets to work.
And there are little go-karts trying to catch up with the bus, and they're banging the side of it because they want gas and blood.
Well, as it turns out, these, little carts have Drop Bears on them. Insofar as they have catapults, and they have little trees that are sticking out of the passenger seat, and that's what the Drop Bear gets on. Oh, it's God, like a sidecar of death.
Oh, my freaking sides.
All right, one last thing, and then we'll let Jack take over with the scumbag story. So, if you are a certified magic judge, coming soon in August of this year, it bleeds over into September, the annual Magic Judge Online Tournament, the Mojo, is going to be taking place. So if you're a judge, and we'll put a link in the show notes. If you go and tell them your Modo account, on one of 3 days, you can play in a free sealed event as a thank you to judges worldwide. So there you go. If you're not a judge, never mind.
It's still fun to know it exists because it's called Mojo.
It is called Mojo. And that, I think, is all the magic news that we have for the week that was.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think of isn't really even worth noting, but we are getting slight updates on the Magic Online progress insofar as they posted some goals for the year of what they would like to get out. Most of it is involving League, and if you're one of the people who cares about Magic Online, go read it. There's not really any highlights, but League is coming, as they have said many times, and League will be fun. Hooray.
Hooray. All right, so, Jack, you've got a story. Go.
Yes, I have a scumbag story about myself, actually. Okay, so Fat Pack Hero is going to be in its third week when you hear this recording, and week two, thanks to some meta results and just basic education about making meta calls, I've decided to go with Bant Fog using Eidolon of Blossoms, Dictator Kurfix, Oppressive Rays, which is my new favorite card, by the way. And just the 6 different or so fog effects in the format. The deck's coming along okay. It's really, really slow, and week 2 taught me kind of that fog is not exactly what it used to be. But I have a particular story that I need to tell, because it's about a particular player that really just annoys me. And it's not that this guy does anything bad. It's not that he's a horrible person or that he's particularly strange or anything like that. Just this guy absolutely gets under my skin for some reason. We call him Doctor Who, because this guy is a massive Doctor Who fanboy of, like, epic proportions that nobody on this cast can even rival. He cuts his hair, like, David Tennant, I think was the guy's name. Mm-hmm. He actually has, like, a doctor coat that he wears year-round, even in the North Carolina summers, and you boys know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And just, like, the guy just, like, I don't even know his real name. Like, I'm serious. I just call him Doctor Who because that's what he has decided to adopt as his persona. And I had to play Magic against him last week. He was my first round opponent. Now, for those of you that don't know, Fog is an extremely slow deck where I play lands until you decide that you hate life and then you scoop. Like, that's actually how the deck wins. You can mill them out. You can use planeswalkers. You can do all this stuff. But the particular version of Fog I had for week 2, the win condition was Psychic Spiral. So I literally had to wait until there was a substantial enough amount of cards in my graveyard to dictate me casting Psychic Spiral and winning. Sometimes this fired off really well, especially because I would be using a lot more Fog effects against aggro decks and things like that. But against Doctor Who, he happened to have 2 Elixirs of Immortality, was playing U.S. Control, where his only way of winning was killing me with Elspeth tokens. And as I sat down and the game progressed, I realized that I didn't care if I won. I didn't care if I beat him. I didn't care if I even made it to game 2. So we had a 45-minute game 1 that ended in a draw. And something else that I do, and he did not gain any board advantage. I did not gain any board advantage. Like, the game, literally, we sat there for 45 minutes. And I even tried to get him to give up to go to a game 2 because I might have stood a chance against him with a sideboard. And the guy didn't want to. So the way I look at it, he brought it upon himself. And something I do with to help the article series and enhance it is I shoot 6-second Vine interviews with people after we play a game, just to give their opinion of the match or whatever in one word. And usually people stumble over it. But I realized that I had gotten him off tilt because we did the Vine interview and I was like, so describe the word in a match, go. And he was just like, annoying. And I was like, well, what's that? You know, David Tennant, like, what was the match wrong with the match? He was like, it was just annoying. It was very annoying. And he picked up his stuff and he huffed out and he immediately dropped. And you know, I probably should have felt guilty about that. There's some small part of me that says like, I really should have felt bad, but all I could think is good. I'm glad you're annoyed. So I was a total scumbag to somebody playing Fog, and I didn't feel bad about it, and that's my story. Go read Fat Pack Hero for all your thrills and chills and kills at mdgbrodeals.com.
It's like you guys challenge each other to a game of who can be the saddest.
I mean, seriously, like, because I really, really tried to get the match moving forward. I was like, you know, because we had sat there about 30 minutes, so we had 15 minutes left on the clock. And I just looked up at him and I said, dude, look, I can't beat you. You can't beat me. Let's sideboard this out and just go ahead and, you know, like, I will even give you the match. Like, I'll give you the round, like, this particular game. Let's go to game two and actually turn this into something, because this is not going to happen game one. And he said no.
He didn't let you concede?
No, like, I was just like, dude, well, I wasn't trying to concede, like, I was willing to continue the match, and we did, so we had a 45-minute game one that was 0-0. But I just told him, I was like, I was trying to appeal to logic and reason, and I should have known better that with a 3,000-year-old time-traveling doctor, there is none. And I was just, I told him, I said, you know, this is not going to end for either one of us, like, let's just go ahead and go to game two and keep the match going. And he said no. And I said,
well,
okay.
One of you has to concede to do that.
Yeah, and I was willing to do it if he was willing to go for it, but he wasn't. And I, like I said, it's this guy who just irritates me and gets under my skin, and I said, okay, and we had a 45-minute game one that ended in 0-0.
But that's why I'm confused. Like, why, like, if you were willing to concede, why didn't you concede?
Because I wanted to troll him, like, honestly.
Well, that's different. That's different entirely. I mean, for those of you, you know, playing at home, you can always concede if you want to just go to game two. They can't just hold you there.
Yeah. So. Like I said, I was trying to see if he was going to be logical and reasonable about it, and he chose not to be, so I decided not to be either and be a giant manlet.
Okay. As long as we know what's going on.
Yep. And I felt good about that. Like, I felt really terrible that I felt good about it, but, there you go. So if I offer you the concession in Fog, guys, just take it. Just always take it and go to game two. And that's my story for the week.
Well, all right then.
Yep.
Hooray.
Yay. So shout outs?
Well, I do have one last thing that should at least be mentioned.
Okay.
Just because it came up today and I did... Someone on Twitter asked me to talk about it, like, just now, so I should at least mention it. For those who don't keep up with the news and don't have alerts sent to their cell phone for this sort of thing, we just detected a gamma ray burst in Andromeda, which, you know, is practically next door, practically.
Ooh, Planet Hulk.
So it's kind of interesting. I actually study gamma ray bursts in my real life. I am an astrophysicist in real life. That's not a joke.
Either real doctor, guys. Forever be way cooler than your job. Just an FYI.
The real downside of this is the particular object, you know, so it's in Andromeda, so it's kind of a northern hemisphere object. Our telescopes are mainly in the southern hemisphere. So yeah, most of my telescopes aren't really going to get a good look at this. But
okay, so to fix this, everyone jump to the north, no matter where you are, and we will turn the planet so that the telescopes are pointing in the correct way.
Yeah, let me actually go. Well, you chat amongst yourselves for a second. I want to see which of my scopes can actually get a look at this.
So Clues, getting back to the, Bill, about the Crisco.
Yeah.
Like,
if you get enough Crisco
both
in
sides,
one place,
just the
you can
one.
Actually rotate
yeah, look,
tap
it didn't,
the planet.
It, guys, it really didn't take me that long to actually pull up this plot. So, yeah, there's only a few of our northern scopes are actually going to be able to hit this thing, and most of those are a little unreliable. So I probably won't get much data on this, but I'm sure lots of folks will. So it is a relatively nearby gamma ray burst. You probably get a gamma ray burst in a typical galaxy, I don't know, once every several million years or so. So it's kind of a rare event, to have one like right next door like that. Don't worry, it is far enough away that nothing is going to happen to us. We are fine. I'm sure there will be some sensationalist news reports that will say, oh my god, we're all gonna die because of this game. No, it's still way too far. You're fine.
What can I do to get superpowers out of this deal?
Something that will give you superpowers, because this isn't gonna be it.
Aw, man. You mean this isn't like how you become Fantastic Four or anything?
No. Now, there are actually two different kinds of gamma ray bursts. One kind is the death of a supermassive star, and one kind comes from, we think, the other kind, we're not 100% sure, but we think it comes from two neutron stars that are in orbit around one another that collide and blow up. It's probably one of the latter, not one of the former, although again, it's going to take us some time to suss this out. But it is interesting. I'm sure you will see it on all the news sites coming up soon. It like literally happened today. Well, not really. It happened like 2.5 million years ago, but we detected it today.
So does that mean that constellation triggers?
Yes, constellation. No, wait a minute. I don't know that it's actually an enchantment.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm assuming this is a god's thing.
I have a quick question. Clues, 5-minute Luddite explanation. Why is this important for observation?
It's very close. So, okay. Let's just do a really brief digression on gamma ray bursts and why they're interesting most of the time. So, gamma ray bursts, the ones I usually study, are the death of a supermassive star. Gamma ray bursts are interesting because they are the brightest explosions since the Big Bang itself. And if something is really, really bright, you can see it really, really far away. So by studying it, if you're looking at something really far away in the universe, since light travels at a constant speed, it's not infinitely fast, when you're looking really far away, you're actually looking really far back in time. So you can use these to study the early universe and how the universe has evolved from when it started to now. So that's why they're super interesting. The closer is... the more data we can get on it, and the better we can refine our models to look at the far ones. So we should be able to get some pretty sweet data on this guy.
Oh, that's really
now,
cool.
Is this happening like in the visual spectrum that we could see unaided, or?
It will ramp up in the visual at least a bit. If it is one of the coalescing neutron star ones, I don't really know what those look like as time goes on, because we don't usually study them. We look at the other ones. The other ones eventually just look like a supernova. They start off looking like a gamma ray burst. Later, they look like a supernova. These things, I'll be honest, I have no idea what these things look like as time goes on, because I don't study this kind. Sorry.
So there's a chance, you can't confirm that this won't happen, where we could go outside and we could look up and we could actually see Heliod fighting Perforos.
That depends entirely on what you have ingested today.
I have had a sandwich and some pasta.
Okay. You're probably not going to see Heliod then.
You see, Watsy, you missed out on another good PR opportunity. First the Elspeth thing and now this. Like, I don't even know if you're trying anymore.
But, you know, if this is that second kind of gamma ray burst, the coalescing neutron stars one, if it is that kind, this may be one of our best chances to get really good data on that kind and to finally figure out exactly what they are. So, only about 30% of gamma ray bursts are that kind. You know, the other two-thirds are the deaths of a supermassive star. So,
okay.
Gamma ray bursts are highly dangerous, and if one goes off in the nearby universe, so kind of our, I don't know, roughly third of our galaxy, give or take, yeah, it'll kill us all.
So we should not eat stars that we don't know where they've been.
Yeah, don't do that. That's very bad. But we actually think there is a hypothesis that one of the large extinction events on Earth actually occurred because of a nearby gamma ray burst.
I don't want to become the Hulk anymore.
Yeah, you definitely don't want a nearby gamma ray burst. Basically, what will happen is in about a minute, it will burn off the entire ozone layer on one side of the planet.
Our side?
Well, whichever side is pointed towards the gamma ray burst at the time.
That's unfortunate.
Very unfortunate, because eventually,
eventually
sunrise will come, and that's not going to be good for anybody.
So we should start building green energy devices to steal that sunlight now, just in case.
Yeah, well, our best bet is to get off the planet. I think we should do that. So.
Okay, guys, I'll start the car. You get out here. Clues, I'm expecting you to grab as much as you can from Atomic, because we're going to get really, really bored when we leave.
If we can put it off a couple of weeks, we could take some boxes of Conspiracy with us.
Ooh, that'll be fun for a day. And that's magic.
Yep. So, there you go. Gamma ray bursts. They could kill us all. The universe wants you dead, is what you should know about the universe.
It's like a giant Australia.
The universe is like Australia. Or it's possible that Australia is kind of a microcosm of the universe, in general.
And these gamma ray bursts are like giant drop bears.
I was gonna say, gamma ray bursts are the drop bears of space.
I don't want to go to space anymore. I'm staying inside.
Yeah, staying inside might be the best, but stay inside and play Modo until it crashes.
So that'll last about a day.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
All right. So anyway, there you go. Gamma ray bursts. Shout outs. Let's sign off. Thanks.
Hey, go Jack first.
Yes, Jack, you are up.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to read about what a horrible person I am to people who like Doctor Who, you can read it at mtgbrodeals.com under the article series Fat Pack Hero. This is week 3. We've got 2 more weeks before I finally have to prove if I'm up to snuff before the end of the season. You can always reach me on Twitter at Jack LaCroix, where I give you my completely unfiltered thoughts, introspections, and curse words. You can also ask me questions anonymously at any point during the week, especially on Tuesdays at jackfromnc.tumblr.com. So there you go.
All right. Awesome. And Squee.
Hey, you can follow me on Twitter at SqueeGoblinNabob, no Iron Goblin. I haven't been posting as much lately as I should, so I'm going to get back on that. I think it was a lot just leading up to various conventions and the like. I'm actually a little annoyed that the convention in Charlotte next week that George R. R. Martin's going to be at has completely sold out, so I can't just show up and see him kill people in real life. But I'm sure it'll happen. I mean,
he's
if
good
it's
at weddings.
Well, I know, right? Like, I kind of want him to officiate. And I don't even care who I'm marrying, because it doesn't matter. I mean, he's officiating. It's like, whoever I don't like, I guess. But, yeah, so I'm going to miss out on that. I will be around again. It'll be good. Also, a special shout-out to Clues' store, Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina, because in the midst of their giant game day thing a week ago, I ran into the unique situation of I need to buy a copy of Eldritch Horror right now. And right now is 9:40 at night. And they close like right at 10. But because the tournament was going on anyway, it was cool. They went to the back. They got stuff for me. I appreciated it. Then my friends and I could stay up until 4 in the morning playing a really long and awesome game. Everybody
wins. I approve of your selection. That's a very fine game.
Eldritch Horror is amazing. I very much enjoy it. If you played Arkham Horror, it's like that, but a lot less messy. So, wonderful.
All
and
right.
That's me.
Awesome. So, I guess that leaves just me. If you want to find more of me, you can find me on Twitter. I am at LockLuze. Feel free to send any magic questions, gamma ray burst questions, you know, whatever comes to mind. Don't ask me about drop bears. I'm trying not to think about those anymore because I eventually need to go to sleep and I may never sleep again. You can also find me pretty much each and every week on the Card Advantage podcast here on the MTGCast network. When I'm in town, you can find me over at Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. It is a great shop. You should check it out for all your gaming needs. They do have a huge selection of board games if you're into that sort of thing. Upcoming events. Well, hey, this coming weekend, if you are in Indianapolis for the SCG event, I will be your legacy head judge. So looking forward to that.
Are you going to use all of your power to wear a bow tie?
Probably not. We'll be wearing the SCG shirts, not the Magic Judge shirts. And the SCG shirts just don't really work with the bow tie. Mm-hmm. I have done it. It just doesn't really work.
That's bad.
Yeah.
So go see Clues.
Yeah. So come see me. I will be the guy wearing the red shirt on Sunday. Oh no, wait a minute. I'm wearing a red shirt. Oh God. I'm going to be killed.
Get some pips. If you got the little things in, you know, your collar, you'll be fine.
Right.
I mean, you're head judge. You got to get at least 3 for that.
Yeah. Good call. All right. Well, that is all the nonsense and non sequiturs that we have for 1 week. We'll be back next week to do it all over again. So please do join us. You have been listening to Monday Night Magic. Sorry about that. This has been episode number 412, and go play some magic.